Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan and Tim are here with me, and now Max joins us to talk about movies and showbiz. Hi, Max. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. I asked Ian to play Oye Como Va by Santana here because I went to see him Wednesday night.
And you were able to kick something off of your bucket list.
Yes. This was one of those shows that I always wanted to go see. And I'm glad I went, but I got to be honest with you, I was a little bit disappointed in the show.
I have a question, because I've seen Santana before at the Fox many, many years ago. I think it was on the Supernatural tour, and he played the guitar a whole lot.
Yep.
Played lots of different songs.
Yep.
But he wasn't one of those, you would think he's front and center, almost like going out into the audience. He's more like back with the drums.
Yes. This is what, well, first of all, people who don't know about Santana, you know, they know about his songs through the years. Oye Como Va, Black Magic Woman, Evil Ways, even Smooth from that Supernatural album you were talking about that won him a whole boatload of Grammys. They think that Santana not only plays the guitar, but is also the lead singer. He's not. He actually sings maybe one-tenth of the time as a backup singer. He's really the guitarist and the leader of the band.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like with the Jay Giles band. That guy out front was Peter Wolf, not Jay Giles. Same thing. So, but you're right, and this was actually one of my pet peeves on Wednesday night. Carlos Santana doing these amazing guitar solos or what, you know, just playing songs facing away from the audience. Standing there looking at the band.
I saw a video of someone put a video on Facebook, and I saw him doing Black Magic Woman into this song.
Yeah, into Oye Como Va.
Yeah, and he did turn around and look at the drummer a lot and look at everyone else. He was turned, and he turned a couple of times to give some cues.
And that's one thing. If you're the musical director of your band, obviously you got to let everybody know, okay, now you're going to do the trombone solo. By the way, there's a trombone player in this band. And I'm here to tell you that sounds silly, but trombone makes rock and roll better.
Yeah.
Yes.
I believe that when Chicago did it, and I believe it now with Santana.
Yeah.
If you're giving the band musical cues, of course you got to turn around and take a look at them.
But you usually turn back around and look at the audience. Instead of staying, turn around.
Kind of melts into the rest of the band, and you're sitting there going, now where is he? Is he?
I paid good money to see Carlos Santana's front, not his back. And also, his keyboard player was set up so that he, when he would be playing most of his solos, he was also turned away from the audience. Hmm. Why doesn't somebody mention this to them? I mean, they're playing in front of 5,000 people at the Fox Theater. You would think at some point somebody would go, excuse me, that's where the audience is sitting.
Maybe they all suffer from stage fright.
Yeah.
No, possible. I don't think after 50 years of being on stage, Carlos Santana has stage fright. And I got to mention one other thing. Ron Isley showed up. Ron Isley from the legendary Isley Brothers lives here in St. Louis. He and Carlos Santana recently did an album together called The Power of Peace. And he came out and he did four songs with Santana.
Nice.
One of which was something like Love is All Around or something like that. And there was a lot of that kind of expression in the course of the evening. And at one point, Carlos Santana gets up and says, you know, in our lifetime, we're going to have peace on earth. And I thought to myself,
what?
No, we're not.
You're right.
First of all, you've been saying that on stage for 50 years. What evidence in that half a century have you seen that we're even anywhere closer?
That we're trending in the right direction.
Yeah. And at one point, they did What the World Needs Now. Love, Sweet Love, the Burt Bacharach, Hal David song, made famous by Dionne Warwick in 1966. Mm-hmm. Okay, that was okay to hear that, fine. But you can't possibly believe that in the times that we live in.
It's like when I saw the Rolling Stones do Love Train, and I'm like, why are you doing the OJs right now? Why are you doing Love Train?
You know, the whole Peace on Earth thing reminded me of, during the Vietnam War, John Lennon and Yoko Ono took out billboards and full-page newspaper ads that said, war is over if you want it. Nope, that is not how war works. If we could just get everybody to want this. By the way, in your life, how does that work for anything? I mean, unless you're a four-year-old boy and you really want something for Christmas and you tell your parents 100 times, maybe you'll get it then. But how in your adult life does the I really want this turn into actual reality? Never. And it certainly doesn't with peace. So I just had to get that out of my system. I enjoyed much of what Carlos Santana was doing the other night, but come on. Peace on earth in our lifetimes.
I was reading an interview with Carlos Santana in the new issue of Rolling Stone, and they were bringing up that we're only 2 years away from the 50th anniversary of the Woodstock concert, the original Woodstock concert.
Yeah.
And they were asking him if he's heard any kind of rumblings or any kind, and he said, yes, they've talked about doing a 50th anniversary performance, that he is very much going to be involved. He wouldn't let any other details. He's not planning it, but somebody who is planning it has reached out to him. And so it looks like after those last two, the 94 and 98, which were disastrous.
Yes, they were.
Not so much 94. That was basically muddy. But 98 was a huge disaster and killed the whole Woodstock brand. But now, I think 50 years, I think that would be kind of cool to see who they could get to play it.
Well, who's still alive?
Well, I mean, Santana, obviously.
Santana, Crosby, Stills, and Nash. You got Townsend and Daltrey from The Who.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is Grace Slick still alive?
Yeah, she looks horrible.
Okay, so
well, the Airplane has a whole new singer. They probably just bring their new singer now. So I mean, yeah. I'm not sure how accurate the band's
going to be. Hard to get Hendrix and Joplin though. I think they're booked.
Yeah,
yes.
Holograms.
Hey, did Santana?
They have them doing a duet with Tupac.
Did he get real spiritual? Other than the peace thing, did he? Because like, remember, I told you when I went to see him the year that Jerry, or a couple days after Jerry Garcia died, he got out and got very spiritual and was talking about this and that, and said he wound it in that he would be more than happy to take Jerry's place if he was asked and this and that. But he got real spiritual, and I'm wondering
there was a little bit of that, not too much.
Okay.
And one other quick thing I got to mention about this: there was one member of the band that I felt sorry for. There are three percussionists, including Santana's wife, who's like my age and unbelievable energy. I was really, really surprised. She was terrific on the drums. And so three percussionists, Carlos Santana, keyboard player, bass player, two singers, and the other guitar player. That's the guy I felt sorry for. Because you know nobody goes to a Santana concert and say, hey, I went to see Santana last night. The other guitarist was great!
Yeah.
I mean, essentially he's just the rhythm guitar guy, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
It's like the seventh flautist in the orchestra. Seventh chair.
That's right.
The one that made all the difference.
We don't even mic her.
No.
You know, his guitar, let's be honest, didn't even need to be plugged in. Right, he's just a backup guitarist.
Yeah. Unless this whole time Santana's been a sham, and it's this nameless guitarist,
the other guy,
who's been doing everything.
I'll tell you his name: Tommy Anthony. I looked it up. Tommy Anthony is the rhythm guitarist in Santana. So that's my quick little concert review.
I wonder what would have happened had Jerry Garcia's ghost, his specter, actually showed up and said, okay, Carlos, let's switch places.
Yeah.
I'll start playing guitar.
Be interesting.
I imagine that he wouldn't have gone so willingly, but
no,
you know, who knows?
I don't think
probably
so.
Not. All right, Max, let's get to the movies.
Yes.
There are three of them opening up in the St. Louis area this week. I've seen none. How many have you seen?
One.
One of them. Okay,
yes.
Well, let's get to that. What was it?
All right, so one of the major ones I did not see that I hope to review next week on here is War of the Planet of the Apes. I missed the press screening, but I am going to try to see it this week.
Is this the one with the Statue of Liberty at the end?
Yes. They all end with the Earth, like every single time. There's been like nine of these, and they're
how many
I know it's not Earth this
apes?
Time. Earth! No, this is a whole new franchise. They rebooted this a couple of years ago.
Because there were five original Planet of the Apes movies.
And this is the third in the new trilogy.
Is this a true story?
Yes. These movies are actually very good, and I was not prepared to enjoy the remake. And then the one from a couple of years ago called Dawn of the Planet of the Apes actually made my top 10 list. I couldn't believe how much I cared about these characters. So I'm actually pretty stoked to see War, but I will hopefully review that next week. What I saw this week is a teen horror movie. There's a tough genre to get right, because it's only PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Wish Upon.
Okay.
Now, we just did about 5 or 6 minutes about how wishing gets you nowhere.
Oh,
right?
My daughter saw this last night.
Okay, there we go.
She's in the demographic.
Yeah.
How old is your daughter?
20.
I wonder if she's, you know what, we can get into it. I wonder if she's too old for it. Did she think it was creepy, or was she kind of like,
she said
stuff?
There were a couple of spots. I just talked to her and asked her how the movie was last night. She said there were a couple of spots that kind of freaked her out, but for the most part, she wasn't into the movie. She likes real scary movies.
And this is why I'm happy to talk about Wish Upon, because I'm going to have to qualify this. It's not necessarily a bad movie, but you have to really know the audience that this is made for. It's not made for just horror movie fans. When I was growing up, I was the biggest scaredy cat in the world. I'm talking from, you know, 10, 11, 12. I hated Halloween. I didn't understand why people wanted to be scared. If a trailer for a horror movie, like Nightmare on Elm Street back in the 80s, would come on TV, I'd have nightmares for weeks.
Okay, I was never that extreme, but I've never been into horror movies either.
About the time I was about 12 or so, 11 or 12, I thought I would confront my fears, and randomly, I don't know why this was the movie, about 1990 or so, there was a movie called The First Power with Lou Diamond Phillips, where he has to take on this supernatural serial killer. It's as bad as it sounds. But I was 12, and I remember thinking, I don't know, I guess I was always a bit of a behind-the-scenes geek, because Stuart Copeland from The Police, the drummer,
yeah,
he did the score for that movie. Yeah. And I thought, well, I like The Police. I like Stuart Copeland. How scary can this be? Even though he's just doing the score. So I went to see it. I got through it. The movie wasn't that good. But I thought, well, this opens my eyes that I can watch more horror films. In the years since, I've really gotten into the genre. I love horror films. I love being scared. I got married on Halloween. I have no trouble with any of this now. And I bring all that up because there are scary or darker movies for kids, like Gremlins or Goonies or Neverending Story. You know, fantasy films that have a darker edge that the kids can really enjoy. The most recent version of this was Goosebumps, mm-hmm. the one with Jack Black. It came out 2 years ago or so. That was a really good movie for 10 or 11-year-olds, but it was just a tiny bit on the scary side. Well, let's say that you're 13. Or you're 14, and you're like I was, or like Paul, and you're not really into Hellraiser, but you'd like something a little more scary than something for kids. That's what Wish Upon is. And I'll remind you again, it's rated PG-13. I think Dan's daughter being 20, she's already aged out. Yeah. This is a pretty narrow...
Wow.
Yeah.
The demographic of the movie is 13 to 18?
I would honestly think that unless you're the biggest scaredy cat in the world, this is almost for little kids. But again, PG-13. And there is death, and there is horror in the movie, but it's so milquetoast. Yes, absolutely. That if you are an older teenager or a young 20-something, or if you love horror movies, there's no reason for you to go see this.
How do you make a horror movie that's milquetoast? Oh no, she tripped on a crack in the sidewalk and she's dead.
Well, it really reminded me of an old Tales from the Crypt or Tales from the Dark Side, something that could have been on television.
Oh, really?
I mean, you had these shows like Monsters or even a darker version of Twilight Zone. This could be shown on television with almost no edits. Again, it's PG-13 just because there is so much death. Now, let's talk about the movie. It's got a pretty good supporting cast. You've got cameos from interesting people. Sherilyn Fenn from Twin Peaks has a random cameo. Shannon Purser from Stranger Things, who was just nominated for an Emmy.
Yeah.
She plays Barb in that show, and that was her first role ever. She's already up for an Emmy. She plays another school chum here. Ryan Phillippe is now old enough that he's playing dads on the big screen. Mm-hmm. I know he's got kids in real life, but it's just weird. Yeah. To see Ryan, you know, okay, I'm the dad. And then the lead actress here is Joey King. Now, Joey King is one of these actresses who's been acting since she was about 6 or 7. She's worked with Zach Braff a whole lot. She's one of those that if you saw her face, you would know who I'm talking about. This is her first lead role, and she's really, really good. Huh. But the movie is kind of a modern take on the Monkey's Paw story. So if we all know what the Monkey's Paw story is, it's sort of the inspiration for the Lemurchance box in Hellraiser, meaning you have this magical device that you make a wish, and then look, I want a new car. Hey, I got a new car. That's great. Oh, my dad's dead.
Like, wow.
I want Santana to
stop wishing for peace on Earth. Imagine what that would do.
Exactly. Because no matter how many wishes you get...
Yeah, there's peace on Earth because all the people are dead.
Well, with Monkey's Paw, you had 3 wishes, and every time you wish for something, something horrible would happen near you.
Wasn't there a movie called The Box?
Same thing. Because The Box was, we're going to give you a lot of money, press a button, and somebody in the world dies, but you don't know who it is. It's a variation on the Monkey's Paw story. And the reason why these stories have been so popular is because the point of all these stories is once the protagonist realizes that they're wishes come with a negative, deadly price, they still do it. Like, they realize, oh, somebody closest to me is going to die. What's my next wish? And the nice thing about Wish Upon is Joey King does that. And I love that. I like a protagonist who maybe is not the most moral person in the world. Mm-hmm. And again, a good movie for teens to see, like, how far would I go if I was in this same predicament. instead of a monkey's paw or a box, this is a music box, and it's an ornate, old Chinese-looking music box that opens and closes. It kind of becomes a character in the movie. But again, I was able to say, well, this is going to happen, that's going to happen, because I've seen movies before. And the other people in the audience were like, well, this isn't scary. And, you know, it's not scary to the point of being almost a sanitized version of a bloodless horror film where the death is all bloodless, there's no gore. Mm. Again, it's fine for a younger person who maybe wants to try to watch. You know, if you're not quite at Hellraiser place, then maybe watch Wish Upon.
Okay, so we have to have a different rating then for yes. people between 13 and 18.
Absolutely.
For them, it might be what on a scale of 10?
You know, I would think if you are, you know, 15 and I don't know, I think this might scare me, I'm going to give this about a 7.
Okay.
I think that it's a good, like, oh, wow, I got through it.
And if you're outside that demographic?
A 2. And you might be asking, well, why would you give this a 2? Well, number one, Joey King is very good. And number two, it's the best unintentional comedy I've seen in quite some time. Somebody gets hit by a car and they go flying. And it's like over the top, like a car would never launch you. And then also, I have to spoil one small thing here. There is a subplot where Ryan Phillippe, through some wishes, gets his groove back and becomes a saxophone player. And he says, I have a gig tonight, ladies. And he starts playing saxophone. And it's laughably bad. It's,
wow.
I was saying on Twitter, hashtag saxophone dad.
And that's how you get a 2 on a scale of 10 from
yep,
Max.
There you go.
The third movie opening this weekend is called Maudie. I don't know anything about it, but I'm 100% sure it's the kind of movie that only plays at the Tivoli.
It's not about Maud, is it?
No.
B. Oh, I've not heard of it either.
If it were a documentary about the late B. Arthur, yeah. I would go see it.
Yeah.
But it's not. I don't know what the plot is, but it's going to be an extreme indie movie. And speaking of movies and where they play, I want to mention again The Big Sick. One of our sales guys, Doug, just came in here right before we went on with this segment and said he had seen it and he absolutely loved it. And the movie theater he went to, Plaza Frontenac, was packed so much that he had to sit in the second row.
And we said, Doug, we're trying to do a show.
I saw trailers for that on TV now, The
yeah.
Big Sick.
Yeah, they're advertising it. And today, it opened in more theaters.
Okay.
So you'll find it at like the Chesterfield Galaxy and some of the other Werenberg/Marcus theaters and some of the AMC theaters around town.
There's a couple people on Twitter who handicap the Oscars. That's what they do. And months and months out, like February, March, they'll say, well, you know, Paul Harris might be nominated for this. Or I mean, it's really random.
For Mrs. Be grinded. There's a chance.
Yes, there's a chance.
Wow.
But this lady who I follow on Twitter named Sasha was saying there's no way that Big Sick will be nominated for Best Picture. I don't. Now, this is somebody who does this kind of as a hobby or for a living. I don't know how they could say that because I have not heard one negative thing about the movie. It seems to me it's a shoe-in for Best Picture.
However, right? And there is always a however in life. It's a comedy. Comedies don't get nominated for Best Picture.
Maybe that's what she's thinking.
But last week, you may remember when I reviewed it and gave it a 10 out of 10, I said that Kumail Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon, his wife, who wrote this movie, which is about their own life, it's a feel-good comedy about a woman in a medically induced coma, that they would probably get a screenplay nomination.
That's
and,
right.
And yeah, I also said that Holly Hunter will be nominated for Best Supporting Actress for playing Emily's mom in the movie. Ray Romano plays her dad. It is a terrific movie. It is a great date movie. It's a great couples movie. It's a great singles movie. It's the best movie of the year. And it's opening in more theaters today.
Nice.
That's why I wanted to mention that. We're back with more showbiz stuff after this on the Big 550 KTR. It's a Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan and Tim and Max are all here with me. We're talking about showbiz. Max just reviewed Wish Upon, which will not be the big box office winner this weekend because there's another movie called War of the Planet of the Apes. Will that be number one this weekend, do you think?
I think it will beat Spider-Man because people have Spider-Man fatigue.
Mm.
All the big fans went out to see Spider-Man. And even though word of mouth has been strong, I think the Apes movies are more critical darlings, actually. I can't believe I'm saying that, but the critics do like the Apes movies.
I have an email here from a woman named Mary Lynn who says, I have a very simple question for you and Max to answer for me. What is the difference between a DVD player and a Blu-ray DVD player?
Well, the formats...
I think she's going out to get one.
Sure. Well, I don't know if you can buy a standard definition DVD player anymore. Blu-rays are about $40 now, and I think they're industry standard because a Blu-ray player will play any standard definition DVD. So I think that's all she needs to know is buy a Blu-ray player because it will also play your older DVDs. The difference comes down to optics. It comes down to the actual laser that is used. And yes, it's a blue laser. That's why they call it a Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. That's actually what is playing the disc. What this technology allowed people to do is put a lot more information on one disc. So more information translates into crystal clear sound, much better sound, and of course higher definition images as well.
And they can also put more features on there?
Well, yeah, because you have more space on there too. So if you remember with DVDs, you would buy a 4-DVD set. When I recently watched Gone with the Wind, it was a 4-DVD set. Well, if you get on Blu-ray, it's 1 Blu-ray because you can pack all that information onto one disc. So it saved companies money, and of course they were able to charge people more money at first, but now they're pretty standard.
Was that the first time you've ever seen Gone with the Wind?
Yes. Yeah, I just watched it about 2 months ago for the first time.
You've seen it one more time than I have.
You know,
Same here.
I recommend watching it.
One of my goals in life is to never see Gone with the Wind.
I started watching it a little bit, and I thought, you know what, maybe I'll try this. And I could not get through like 15 or 20 minutes of it.
What took me so long was the length. And, of course, the subject matter, I didn't think I would care about that. And it's 4 hours long. It's 4 hours and plus. But I split it up over two nights. When they took the intermission, I just went to sleep. And then the next night, I'd watch it again.
When movies had intermissions.
Yeah. And this one definitely does. It really is split into two parts. If you want to hear or at least read what I thought about Gone with the Wind, I wrote about it for a site called Zeke Film, Z-E-K-E, ZekeFilm.org. And it was a whole article about first-time watches. And so I watched Gone with the Wind.
Let me say this. I have nothing against people who like or love Gone with the Wind. I just want that on the record here in case my wife is listening. Because she has seen it and liked it and showed it to my daughter, and I left the room.
Do you just hate Clark Gable?
No. You know what? I had reached a certain point in my life where I hadn't seen it, and so I determined, okay, I'm just going to continue with this for the rest of my life.
What if it turns out it would have been your favorite film of all time, and you're denying yourself... Like
it seems unlikely.
But if somebody just said, The Big Sick, I'm not going to see it ever.
And that's okay.
But it's just a little weird to deny yourself.
I tried it and couldn't watch anymore.
All right. I think I'd probably be in the same camp.
Okay.
But that, again, nothing wrong with people who like or love that movie. Don't email me. Don't write in here.
I will say I greatly enjoyed it from a technical standpoint. From a story standpoint, it's more than problematic. But I think it's also an interesting snapshot of how the 1930s felt about the Civil War era. It's obviously not accurate to that era. It's more about what the 1930s wanted to present about it. That's interesting.
What about the movie Citizen Kane?
It's a masterpiece.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You never saw it, Dan?
No.
I
tried that one, too.
That's one of those that if you called it Psychopathic Newspaper Man, people would watch it. It's been built up so much, people hear the name Citizen Kane and they roll their eyes.
Well, that's the problem. For me with Gone with the Wind and for Dan with Citizen Kane, there's no way the movie can be as good as everybody has said it is to me.
Exactly.
The bar is too high.
Well, but it's not always the case. If somebody said that about Casablanca, they would be correct. Or
Casablanca is another one for me.
Well, Casablanca is a masterpiece. Godfather is a masterpiece. Some movies are as good as their reputation.
Yes, I agree.
Godfather is Casablanca to me. I did the 15-20 minute thing, and I'm
really?
Like, I can't do
oh,
this.
I've seen it so many times.
Me too. Well, that personal taste, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you talked about the Civil War. You reminded me of a movie called Irreconcilable Differences. You ever see this movie?
I don't believe so.
Ryan O'Neill.
Oh, and Drew Barrymore.
And Shelley Long. And Drew Barrymore. Mm-hmm. And Drew Barrymore plays like an 8 or 9 year old girl who takes her parents to court because she has irreconcilable differences with them. And in the movie, Ryan O'Neill plays this professor and movie critic turned director, kind of like Peter Bogdanovich.
Okay.
And he wants to make a movie called Atlanta, and he gets the money from the studio to go out and make it, and he's married to Shelley Long, who's helping him write it, and they hire as their star a very, very young Sharon Stone. in one of her first movies, long before Basic Instinct. And there are scenes in that movie where he's recreating things that happened during the Civil War, you know, dead people all over, and there's a guy who's a fly wrangler.
Fly wrangler?
Yeah, because he wants thousands of flies around all these dead bodies that are lying in this gigantic field. Mm. And he says, okay, now, we only have one chance to do this. And somebody says, why? Because we're losing light? No, because we're going to lose the flies. Yeah, it's very clever. Very inside, but very clever. You may want to put that on your queue if you haven't seen it. It's called Irreconcilable Differences.
It sounds like something that Tatum would have actually liked to have done back then.
To break away?
Yeah, suit her dad.
Yeah. Instead, she went off and married John McEnroe. TV notes. The Penn and Teller series Fool Us returned last night, and it's going to be on Channel 11 every Thursday night for the rest of the summer.
Is Allison Hannigan still the host?
She is, and there's no reason for her to be there whatsoever. But
except okay. She's cute.
Yeah, okay, she's fine. But I want to mention that last night's episode is going to be rerun tonight at 9 o'clock on Channel 11. And if you didn't see it last night, I strongly recommend you set your DVR to see this because of the first act who was on the show, who's a magician. He doesn't actually call himself a card magician. He calls himself a card mechanic. His name is Richard Turner. Richard Turner is the most amazing card mechanic I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen video of lots of these people, and I know plenty of sleight-of-hand magicians who can do amazing things, but Richard Turner is super amazing because he's blind. He's doing everything with his fingers and feeling where things are, so much so that in the show last night, and if you watch it tonight, you'll see this as well, Teller, who is also a great close-up and sleight-of-hand magician, is watching him, and his mouth is agape as he's watching him because he doesn't even understand what Richard Turner is doing
Don't
and
the
how
cards
well he's doing it.
All feel the same?
Well, that's the question.
Hmm.
And is this whole my fingers can see, is that all part of the act? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Here's what I know.
I imagine there's something there that he could...
Here's what I know. What he does is truly amazing, and I'm a layman, but when it's truly amazing to Teller, then you know you've really got something. And, you know, on that show, the conceit is, can these magicians come on here and do something, and Penn and Teller can't figure out how they did it. And most of the time they can. They do it respectfully.
There's been some really great acts that they'll say, okay, and they never really give it away. They just say, well, if the banana is an orange, and they go, yeah, you got it. And right. I love that,
yes.
Because I'm like, how did you know? Like, what are you even saying?
It's all inside magic talk, but they don't give it away.
Right.
But you still get to see these terrific performers, the ones who were on last night. And you'll see again tonight. We're all good. But for this Richard Turner, at a point where Penn and Teller are supposed to walk back to their chairs and deliberate, they walk about six steps and they throw their hands up in the air, turn around and go, just bring the thing down. He fooled us.
Wow.
We cannot figure this out.
That's great.
It's unbelievable. So 9 o'clock tonight on Channel 11. You may want to record last night's episode of Fool Us. It's that good.
With Allison Hannigan.
Yes. Game of Thrones is back on Sunday night. Do you watch this show?
Never saw a single second of it.
Either have I. I'm not a...
Not a dragons guy.
No. Sword and sandals and that kind of epic.
I thought it was some sort of like medieval, you know, sword play. I'm going to take over your kingdom. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I saw a trailer with dragons and I thought, I'm out.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch
exactly
that.
Exactly the way I feel. I also want to mention something that my wife and I watched on DVD this week. It is the Ron Howard documentary about the Beatles called 8 Days a Week, The Beatles Touring Years.
Finally, somebody has given us something about the Beatles.
Well, there's a lot of stuff in here, a lot of stories in here that were part of the Beatles anthology.
I know, I'm just saying.
But what Ron Howard has gotten his hands on is a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff of when the Beatles were out there, first in Hamburg and then in the United States, from 62 to about 66, doing all of their stuff on stage, and how difficult it became for them to do these performances, particularly when they were playing like Busch Stadium or Shea Stadium or Candlestick Park or some of these outdoor places. You got to remember that we're talking 50 years ago. Nowadays, you see somebody, you know, when U2 comes and plays at the Dome later on this year, they'll have monitors in their ears you know, earpieces where they'll have the perfect mix different for each different member of the band. So Bono will hear something different than the Edge hears, and, you know, highlighting various things that are going on. It'll all be absolutely perfect, and they'll have that. When the Beatles were doing that, there was no such thing as in-ear monitors. They didn't even have stage monitors. They had their amps with microphones in front of them, which fed through the stadium PA.
Yeah.
And if you've ever heard music played through a stadium PA, it's kind of like an AM music station.
Yeah, it's echoey a little bit.
And it's not it's lower quality than an AM music station. And they actually talk about that. And you see John and Paul and George and Ringo talking about how difficult it was to do the live shows where the girls were screaming so loud.
Mm-hmm.
McCartney and Lennon could be 8 feet away from each other, and they couldn't hear each other. And there were no monitors to give them the mix. Can you imagine that, Dan? You're in a band. Can you imagine not hearing the other people you're playing with?
No.
Probably be better for Dan.
Yeah. No, it's bad. It's bad when you can't hear, because that's happened before.
So
you can't hear the other guitar player, and you can't hear the lead, and you're like, wait, I need my cue. I need a cue to come in and do something different.
But you can't hear it at all.
Yeah.
And you also get to see the effects of Beatlemania on these guys who year after year couldn't go anywhere. And every place they did go that they were going to perform, or just when they wanted to go out into the street, they were mobbed like no other act ever had been before. It's a terrific documentary. It's called 8 Days a Week, The Beatles Touring Years, directed by Ron Howard. It's out on DVD, and I enjoyed that. Speaking of bands performing live, let's get in a plug for your band, The Daily Planet, Dan.
Yeah, the Seventh Planet
Band.
That's
what I said.
Tonight, we start at 7:30 to 11:30 at Shirley's on 94 in St. Charles. Right off of 370, they're having another bike night. I think through the summer, once a month, they're going to do a bike night. And we
now, is that a motorcycle thing or a bicycle thing?
No, a motorcycle thing.
Okay, so kids on tricycles, not invited?
Well, they can come by, sure. I think if they want to.
Okay.
Kids on trikes want to come by. But
you'll probably get more adults on tricycles now that I think about it.
Yeah, and they have pretty good food, and they have good food there. And
it's pretty good food.
It is good food.
He's the king of endorsements.
I know.
No, they have, if you're hungry, I mean, I guess they got some food there.
No, they do have food, and it's good food.
Okay.
But we're playing from 7:30.
How's the music? Will they have music? Yeah, it's good music.
The music's good music.
It's pretty good
music from the Seventh Planet Band. Pretty good music tonight at 7:30.
All right, so go see Dan and the Daily Planet tonight.
And if it's nice out, we're going to play outside.
And that's at Laverne's is the name of the place?
Shirley's.
Sorry.
Oh, gotcha. I see what you did there.
That's the showbiz stuff for this week here on the Big 550 KTRS.